Chapter 24. Maud Ivory planted her wispy frame squarely in front of Lucy Gray. She scrunched her face and balled her hands into fists.
You get out of here, Billy Tope! None of us want you anymore!
Billy Tope rocked slightly as he surveyed the group.
Less want than need, Maud Ivory.
Don't need you neither. Go on and get, and take your weasel girl with you,
ordered Maud Ivory.
Lucy Gray encircled her with her arm, pressing her hand against the little girl's chest, either to soothe or restrain her.
You're all sounding thin. You're sounding thin,
slurred Billy Tope, and one hand slapped his instrument.
We can do without you, Billy Tope. You made your choice. Now leave us be,
said Barb Azure, her quiet voice underlaid with steel. Tam Amber said nothing but gave a small nod of assent. Pain flashed across Billy Tope's face.
Is that how you feel, Cece?
Clerk Carmine curled his fiddle in close to his body. Although the covey varied in complexion, hair, and features, Coriolanus noticed a distinct resemblance between these two. Brothers, maybe?
You can come with me. We'd do all right, we two, Billy Tope pleaded.
But Clerk Carmine stood his ground.
All right, then. Don't need you. Never needed any of you anyway. Never will. Always did better on my own.
A couple of peacekeepers began to close in on him. The one who'd given Lucy Gray the bottle of white liquor laid a hand on his arm.
Come on now, show's over.
Billy Tope jerked away from his touch and then gave him a drunken shove. In an instant, the sociable mood in the hob changed. Coriolanus could feel the tension sharp as a knife. Miners who'd either ignored him or given him nods over their bottles became belligerent. The peacekeepers straightened up, suddenly alert, and he found his own body almost standing at attention. As a half dozen peacekeepers moved in on Billy Tope, he felt the miners surge forward. He was readying himself for the brawl that was sure to follow, when someone pulled the plug on the lights, sending the hob into blackness. Everything froze for an instant. Then chaos erupted. A fist caught Coriolanus's mouth, sending his own fists into action. He struck out arbitrarily, focused only on securing his own circle of safety. The same animal wildness he'd experienced when the tributes had hunted him down in the arena swept over him. Dr. Gall's voice echoed in his ears.
That's mankind in its natural state. That's humanity undressed.
And here was naked humanity again. And here again he was a part of it, punching, kicking, his teeth bared in the darkness. A horn outside the hob blared repeatedly, and truck headlights flooded the area by the door. Whistles blew, and voices shouted for the dispersal of the crowd. People lurched toward the exit. Coriolanus fought the wave, trying to locate Lucy Gray, but then decided the best chance of finding her would be out front. He jostled his way through the bodies, still throwing the occasional punch, and spilled out into the night air where the locals took flight and the peacekeepers gathered in a loose bunch, making only a weak show of pursuit. Most of them had not even been on duty, and there was no organized unit to address the spontaneous eruption. In the dark, nobody was even sure who they'd been fighting. Better to let it lie. Coriolanus found it unnerving, though. Unlike at the hanging, the miners had fought back. Sucking on a split lip, he positioned himself to watch the door. But the last stragglers wandered out without any sign of Lucy Gray, the covey, or even Billy Tope. He felt frustrated at having been so close but unable to talk to her. Was there another exit to the hob? Yes, he remembered a door by the stage, which must have allowed them to slip out. Mayfair Lip had not been so fortunate. She stood flanked by peacekeepers, not under arrest, but not free to go either.
I've done nothing wrong. You've no right to hold me,
she spat at the soldiers.
Sorry, miss, said a peacekeeper. For your own protection, we can't let you go home alone. Either you let us escort you or we call your father for further instructions.
The mention of her father shut Mayfair up, but did not improve her attitude. She seethed, her lips pressed into a thin, mean line that said someone would pay, just give her time. There did not seem to be much enthusiasm for the task of taking her home, and Coriolanus and Sejanus found themselves recruited for the job. either because they'd made a good showing at the hanging or because they were both relatively sober. Two officers and three other peacekeepers made up the rest of the party.
At this hour, what with the climate, it's probably better to be on the safe side, one officer said. It's not far.
As they wove through the streets, their boots grinding against the grit, Coriolanus squinted into the darkness. Streetlights illuminated the capital, but here he had to rely on the sporadic flickers from windows and the pale beams of the moon. Unarmed, without even the protection of his white uniform, he felt vulnerable and stuck close to the group. The officers had guns. Hopefully, that would keep assailants at bay. He remembered the Grand Mam's words.
Your own father used to say those people only drank water because it didn't rain blood. You ignore that at your own peril, Coriolanus.
Were they out there now, watching and waiting for a chance to quench their thirst? He missed the safety of the base. Fortunately, after only a few short blocks, the streets opened up onto a deserted square, which he realized was the location of the annual reaping. A few unevenly spaced floodlights helped him navigate the cobblestones under his feet.
I can get home fine from here, said Mayfair.
We're in no hurry, one of the officers told her.
Why don't you just leave me alone?
Snapped Mayfair.
Why don't you stop running around with that good-for-nothing? Suggested the officer. Trust me, that won't end well.
Oh, mind your own business, she retorted.
They made a diagonal cross, left the square, and followed a freshly paved road to the next street over. The party drew to a halt at a large house that might count for a mansion in District 12, but would be unremarkable in the capital. Through the windows wide open in the August heat, Coriolanus caught glimpses of well-lit, furnished rooms in which humming electric fans fluttered the curtains. His nose picked up a whiff of the evening's dinner. Ham, he thought, causing his mouth to water slightly and thinning out the bloody taste from his lip. Maybe it was just as well he'd missed Lucy Gray. His lips were in no shape for a kiss. As one of the officers laid a hand on the gate, Mayfair pushed past him, darted up the path, and slipped into the house.
"Should we tell her parents?" asked the other. "What's the point?" said the first. "You know how the mayor is. Somehow her traipsing around at night will be our fault. I can do without a lecture."
The other muttered agreement, and the party headed back across the square. As Coriolanus followed, a soft, mechanical wheeze caught his attention, and he turned to the shadowy bushes that lined the side of the house. He could just make out a figure standing motionless in the gloom, back pressed against the wall. A light on the second floor flipped on, and the yellow glow extending down revealed Billy Tope, nose bloodied, scowling directly at him. He held his instrument, the source of the wheeze, against his chest. Coriolanus's lips parted to alert the others, but something held his tongue. What was it? Fear? Indifference? Uncertainty as to how Lucy Gray would react? The band had made their position clear when it came to his rival, and yet he didn't know how they would take Coriolanus's ratting him out, possibly landing him in jail. What if it made Billy Tope a sympathetic character, someone they would rally around and forgive? He could tell that the Covey loyalties ran deep. Then again, perhaps they would welcome it? Particularly Lucy Gray, who might be very interested to know that her old flame had run to the mayor's daughter's house for solace. What had he done to be ousted from all things Covey, band, and home? He remembered the final words to her song, her ballad from the interview.
Too bad I'm the bet that you lost in the reaping. Now what will you do when I go to my grave?
Surely the answer lay there. Mayfair appeared and closed the window. Then she drew the curtain, blocking the light and concealing Billy Tope. The bushes rustled and the moment had passed.
Corio?
Sejanus had returned for him.
You coming?
Sorry, just lost in thought, said Coriolanus. Sejanus nodded to the house.
It reminds me of the capital.
You don't say home, Coriolanus pointed out.
No.
For me, that will always be District 2, Sejanus confirmed. But it doesn't matter. I'll probably never see either place again. As they walked back, Coriolanus wondered about his own odds of seeing the capital again. Before Sejanus came, he'd thought they were zero. but if he could return as an officer, maybe even a war hero, things might be different. Of course, then he'd need a war to excel in, just as Sejanus needed one in order to be a medic. Coriolanus's shoulders relaxed when the gates of the base closed behind him. He washed his face and crawled into his bunk above Beanpole's inebriated snores. His pulse beat in his swollen lip as he replayed the evening. It had all gone like a dream, seeing Lucy Gray, hearing her sing, her joy at the sight of him, until Billy Tope had showed up and spoiled the reunion. It was just another reason to hate Billy Tope, although seeing the Covey's rejection of him was deeply satisfying. It confirmed that Lucy Gray belonged to him. Sunday breakfast brought the bad news that, because of the previous evening's altercation, no soldier was to leave the base alone. The higher-ups were even considering placing the hob off-limits. Smiley, Bug, and Beanpole, although hungover and bruised from the night before, bemoaned the state of things, having nothing to look forward to if their Saturday outings were canceled. Sejanus only cared because Coriolanus cared, recognizing that this was just one more hurdle to seeing Lucy Gray. "Maybe she'll visit you here," he suggested as they cleared their trays. "Can she do that?" Coriolanus asked, but then hoped she wouldn't, even if she could. He had little unscheduled time, and where would they even be allowed to talk? Through the fence? How would that be viewed? Caught up as he had been in the romance of the previous evening, he'd been planning to greet her publicly with a kiss, but in hindsight, that would have brought on a barrage of questions from his bunkmates and doubtless raised a few eyebrows among the officers. Their whole history, including his forced enlistment, would come out, and with it his cheating in the games. In addition, given the troubles between the locals and the peacekeepers, it would be wise to keep the relationship private. Whispering through the fence might encourage rumors that he was a rebel sympathizer, or even worse, a spy. No, if they were going to meet, he would have to go to her, secretly. Today would be a rare opportunity to track her down, but he'd need a buddy to leave the base. "I think we'd better keep things between us a secret. She might get in trouble if she came here. Sejanus, did you have plans today, or—" he began. "She lives in a place called the Seam," said Sejanus, "near the woods." "What?" said Coriolanus. "I asked one of the miners last night, very casually," Sejanus smiled. "Don't worry. He was too drunk to remember. And yes, I'd be happy to go with you." Sejanus told their bunkmates they were heading into town to see if they could swap a pack of Capital chewing gum for letter paper. But the ruse proved unnecessary, as all the mates took their abused bodies back to their bunks right after breakfast. Coriolanus wished he had money for a gift of some kind, but he had nary a cent. As they passed the mess hall on the way out, his eyes fell on the ice machine, and he had an idea. In this hot weather, the soldiers were permitted to take the ice freely for their drinks, or to cool off. Rubbing cubes over their bodies provided a little relief in the sauna of a kitchen. Cookie, who he'd won over with his diligent dishwashing, gave Coriolanus an old plastic bag. The day being so hot, he agreed it would be all right to take some ice on their outing to ward off heatstroke. Coriolanus didn't know if the Covey had a freezer, but by the looks of the houses he'd passed on his way to the hanging, he thought that might be a luxury few could afford. Anyway, the ice was free, and he didn't want to go empty-handed. They signed out at the gate, where the guard cautioned them to be careful, and walked off in what they remembered to be the general direction of the town square. Coriolanus felt apprehensive. With the mines shut down for the day, though, a hush lay over the district, and the few people they passed ignored them. Only a small bakery stood open in the town square, its doors propped wide to allow a breeze to temper the heat of the ovens. The owner, a beet-faced woman, had little interest in providing directions to non-paying customers, so Sejanus bartered his fancy chewing gum for a loaf of bread. Relenting, she took them out on the square and pointed at the street they were to follow to the Seam. Beyond the town center, the Seam sprawled out for miles, the regular streets quickly dissolving into a web of smaller, unmarked lanes that rose up and then petered out for no discernible reason. Some boasted rows of worn, identical houses. Others had makeshift structures it would be generous to call shacks.